Welcome to In The Zone, brought to you by U.S. Construction Zone, bringing you strategies for success with construction innovators and change makers, including In The Zone peer-nominated national award winners. Here are your hosts, Jeremy and Valerie Owens.
Hi, and welcome to In The Zone with Valerie and
Jeremy Owens. Welcome.
Today we have the pleasure of speaking with Jennifer Green, who is with Skills Ontario and is a groundbreaking leader, trailblazer for women in the skills industry.
Yeah, I mean, she's done great things for the skilled trades. And so we have a great conversation about her experiences in a very male-dominated society and industry and some of the challenges that she overcame to get to where she is now, but also some of the positive things that she's seen along the way as well. So it's definitely, something that we as an organization want to pay attention to. We don't want to, just say we're about women in construction. We need to talk to them and figure out what their challenges are and how we can help. So it's good to get it started with Jennifer, and we have a lot more coming up, but definitely good to hear her experiences and also her accomplishments. Mm-hmm. All right. So have fun listening to Jennifer Green. All right. Jennifer Green has been labeled as a fearless trailblazer and glass ceiling breaker for women in non-traditional careers and continues to advocate and be a leader in the skilled trade community. She has promoted the advancement of the skilled trades across Ontario, Canada, and beyond for almost 20 years in various roles through volunteerism, speaking engagements, and consulting. Jennifer is the Director of Competitions at Skills Ontario, an organization focusing on encouraging youth to explore and pursue careers in the skilled trades and technologies. Among her accolades, she has been presented with the Universal Women's Network Women of Inspiration Award, WXN Top 100 Canada's Most Powerful Women Award, and the Conestoga College Alumni of Distinction Award, along with founding countless other initiatives. Please help me welcome Jennifer Green. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I appreciate that. I don't know, that was quite a list of accolades there. You must be very proud. So thanks a lot.
I am. Thank you very much. It's definitely a journey of passion, to say the least.
Cool. Well, we'll get right started with our first question. Please describe your upbringing and what led you to pursue a career in the skilled trades.
So it all started in high school when I thought that I was going to go to university for forensic criminology. And I had an opportunity for cooperative education, and I'd taken tech all along, but used it as a bird course. I was good at it, enjoyed it, got good grades. So I was using the good grades to get my university application up even higher. And even though my father is a tool and die maker, it never was pushed as a career option. And when it came to co-op, I thought, let's go have some fun instead of all the university courses, but I had no idea what to take. And I literally sat down with my local college course description guide, which was Conestoga. And I read through all the descriptions of all the different skilled trades that they offered and landed on industrial mechanic millwright. And it is the one that spoke to me of problem solving and the jack of all trades and doing hydraulics and pneumatics and blueprinting and mechanical troubleshooting, machining, electrical, plumbing, you name it, right? Ended up falling in love with it, and I became a registered apprentice while in grade 12 through the Ontario Youth Apprenticeship Program, known as OYAP. I was able to start my apprenticeship right away before I'd even technically graduated high school, and ended up having my license by the age of 21. And so what led to it was, even though it was in my family, it was not the first choice presented to me. I kind of fell more into it and was able to discover something that was never shown to me before. And had it not been for those old school paper copies of course guides, I might not have ever been able to find them, when you could walk into guidance and like grab the book and like flip through it. Now everything's available online, and it's so much easier to find. Yeah. So really being able to find and explore the different careers that are available to you could literally change your life.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I know, that's amazing. You obviously are a woman in a male-dominated industry. How have those challenges, how did you have to face those challenges early on, and how has it been as you've moved forward in the industry?
Yeah, so I mean, 20 years ago was a lot different. There wasn't really any social media, and there certainly weren't any support groups or programming for women in trade. So I was labeled a woman of firsts and a guinea pig, where I was always the first woman in my courses and classes. I was the only woman in the factory, and most men had never worked with a woman before. And when I started through co-op and OEF, I was only 16. And then by the time I started my apprenticeship, I was 18 and had my license by 21. So I had a huge age discrimination against me, where the next closest person to my age was a decade older than me, whether it be in class or in work. And so it really added a lot of things, where not only did I have my gender against me in such a male-dominated trade, where when I started, only 1% of women in Canada were in millwrighting, and today it's 3%. So I had age and gender against me, and it really truly was a guinea pig, where I was normally the first one down the road. I was normally the first one that most people had ever worked with a woman before. And it was quite the learning curve. There was a lot of not so great things happened, but a lot of great things that happened as well. And my philosophy was 50-50. I'll meet you halfway if you meet me halfway, understanding I'm here to stay. I know that this is a challenge for you as well, especially if your entire career and the generation or the values that you grew up with meant that a woman isn't supposed to be here. So understanding the other half of things as well definitely takes a big step on my end as well.
Did that motivate you to, or how did that motivate you to go beyond what was expected of you? Did you feel like, did your grades have to show it? Did your work ethic? I mean, what did you...
I was constantly having to prove myself. Again and again and again, you always had to prove yourself 10 times more than anyone else around you, just to show that you are capable, that you deserve to be there. And one of the things that really helped launch my career was the Skills Ontario competition, then known as the Ontario Technological Skills Competition, where we're part of World Skills Organization with over 80 member countries involved. And it's just like the Olympics, except it's for skilled trades and technologies, and students and apprentices get to compete against one another. And my college, Conestoga, chose me to represent them for millwright. And I laughed and I said, no. I said, no. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, what if I come in last? I'm like, I'm not willing to put more to the stereotype than what there already is. And I was afraid and I didn't want to do it. And my teacher sat me down and said, like, we chose you for a reason. We feel that you can do this. So I made a deal with them and said, so long as you help train me and support me, I will do it. Well, I proved myself wrong. I don't like coming in last. I do not like getting low grades. And I ended up winning gold in Ontario and moved on nationally and got silver in Canada and was the second woman ever to compete in that contest. And the respect that it gained me in my career as being a woman in a male-dominated trade really helped launch things and change things. And it's always given me a drive to do the best thing that I possibly can to make everything the best that it can be for change, efficiency, effectiveness. How can I make things better?
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great segue into this next question, because in our pre-call, we talked a lot about how often you just said yes, you know? So when that question came or that opportunity came, you said yes. And then you learned public speaking. And I mean, so many young people, that's like their number one fear, right? I mean, our daughters, like, they stress about, oh my gosh, I have a presentation tomorrow. I'm like, just keep doing it. Because you said yes to those public speaking events, and that launched all these other opportunities that you probably weren't aware of.
Yeah, it was almost like having a second career with all the volunteer work that I did. So I had one career that was mechanical and my trade, and then I had this other career of public speaking, where I'd already done public speaking in school and like competitions and stuff, but never did I think I was going to do anything with it. But when I was in high school, I was also the first woman signed in the OEAT program for my entire school board. So I really stuck out like a sore thumb, and groups started picking me up. And I started doing keynotes from there, and it snowballed. And you're right. The only time I've ever said no was I couldn't get the time off, or I didn't have vacation. But I said yes to as much as I possibly could to help advocate for skilled trades and the skills labor gap and women and underrepresented people in skilled trades. And it really turned into having two careers at once and built these two completely different playing fields of the skill sets that I was able to gain throughout my career.
Yeah, it's It's also interesting, you were saying like you were the first a lot of times in each kind of position. Did they have to write like policies and change handbooks and all sorts of stuff like that just to make it work?
That's a really great question. In one instance, a change room had to be changed from a male change room into a female change room because there wasn't one. I was the first pregnant millwright that the company had ever had. And my manager had to walk into HR and say, I have a pregnant millwright. What do I do? Because there was no policy for a skilled tradesperson for light duty. So I was part of the process of working with my doctor and working with the company and writing a policy for future women after me to have a policy in place because I was the first. So really coming up with different ideas and outside of the box and what's missing, what still needs to be done. I mean, when I started, I was put into a size 44 coverall. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot more options today. Like, I mean, a lot more options, but I was looking at a picture of myself the other day as an apprentice and I was going to do a side-by-side in a social media post. And I looked at the picture and I just started laughing. I was like, oh my goodness. I'm like, look how big those coveralls really are. And so as far as like even just proper fitting, like clothing and PPE are such a barrier of things that people are working on, but we need a lot more as well, as far as that's not necessarily a policy, but what else needs to be done?
Right, to get the right representation.
It shows you how archaic, though, the whole industry was. Like, to not have anything in writing, not even, like, having enough foresight to be like, hey, we might hire women eventually. Maybe we should have something about that.
Well, and I mean, it's not even that. It's about if you've never had the situation in the course of 10 years, 20, 30, 40, 50, if it's having to be able to spend the time on putting something together until it actually happens, right? So it's all dependent on like time-wise when you're working on what projects, deadlines, how much time do you really have and what's actually going to happen or that you never thought would happen. And that's also another really great case there is, I mean, this is a big change in the last how many years. Yes, more women are coming into skilled trades, but a lot of them, again, necessarily weren't mothers or parents at the time, and it is becoming more and more common. So things like that are needing to be written in. But you look at it 20 years ago, and it didn't really necessarily need to be there because it wasn't happening.
Gotcha.
Jennifer, please describe what Ontario is doing to help promote the skilled trades for young people, and then your role in that, in making that happen.
Yeah, for sure. So my current role is at Skills Ontario. We're a not-for-profit, as I noted, part of World Skills. So it goes World Skills, and then countries have a skill, such as Skills Canada, Skills USA, and then each of the states in the U.S. and each of the provinces and territories in Canada also have a member organization. And our goal is to promote skilled trades and technologies to young people as a viable and real career option to explain to them what's out there. So our organization does everything from conferences, workshops, competitions, and different events to be able to promote and get kids hands-on, whether it be literally hands-on doing workshops with experts or doing a presentation just explaining what the trades are and the different paths. And some of my other roles, I currently just finished a 9-month appointment with Ontario's Ministry of Labour, Training and Skills Development as an apprenticeship youth advisor, where our goal was to meet with stakeholders all across the province and come up with a final report on what needs to happen on Ontario. It was really wonderful because in November of 2021, the Ministry of Labour, Training and Skills Development announced $90 million over the course of the next 3 years to go in towards skilled trades for youth. That was based on the Youth Advisor's final recommendation. So it was really exciting to meet with hundreds and hundreds of stakeholders and have a province-wide survey to have those with their boots on the ground have an opportunity to have their voice heard in change for the province. So really proud of what Ontario is doing as a province in moving skilled trades along. I see more commercials about skilled trades now from our government and our federal government than I have ever seen in my entire career. So it's really exciting to see those higher levels really jumping on board and noticing, realizing, and understanding the gap that we truly are in and how much worse it's going to continue to get if we don't do something about it.
That's fantastic.
Awesome. So is Ontario, are they just kind of starting with the messaging now at this point? Like you said, commercials, is it?
No, they definitely started a while back. They launched a media campaign called A Career You Wouldn't Trade that was focused on skilled trades. And I think that was 2 years ago. Don't quote me on that. And there'll be a lot more messaging as well. For example, the new Skilled Trades Ontario just launched, and it's the new Crown agency for skilled trades and apprenticeships in Ontario.
Whoa. Wow. That's exciting.
I know.
It is.
Let's see. So next one is, we also understand that you are a mentor to other women coming up in the trades. What helpful advice do you typically give them?
My favorite one by far is simple, is for tools. Tools are expensive. Doesn't matter what brand you buy, for as many as you need. Not many companies will provide them for you, or if they do, it's normally the bigger, expensive ones. And one of my favorite pieces of advice is go buy all your tools at Christmas and Father's Day. The best sales are on Father's Day. Go buy the huge, like, 3,000-piece package and go get it for 75% off. Yeah. And up here, we have a store called Canadian Tire that sells Mastercraft Maximum. It has a lifetime warranty. So it breaks, go into the store and replace it. I love Snap-on. I love Graybar. I love all those brands. But they are expensive. And as an apprentice, you're not necessarily going to be able to afford those. They are the top of the line tools, but they are expensive. So as an apprentice, if you can find something else that has a lifetime warranty that you can constantly get on sale from a big box store, why not? So that's a fun piece of advice. But as far as a more serious piece of advice, if you're dealing with harassment, keep a journal. Keep a log. Make sure that you find witnesses and that they're willing to make note that they saw or heard something, whether they saw you talking to somebody or they were actually there. Doesn't matter how small or how big it is in the industry, and we still have a ways to go. So if you are going to be in the industry, make sure that you understand how to handle the situation, what to do, and who to talk to. Find a mentor. Find a mentorship group, whether it be a group for your career, for your trade specifically, or for your industry or sector. Find someone that you can relate to that has an ear who's maybe also been there, because they're going to be able to be the ones to give you the best advice on how to handle some of the sticky situations.
That's good advice.
Excellent advice. What positive trends are you seeing in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the trades, and where do you find the need for most improvement still?
I think one of the big exciting things is you see a lot of roles specifically now for DE&I, that there are actual managers and directors for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that's making a big difference as well, as far as recognizing when we're talking about women in trades, also saying women and those who identify as women, and making sure to be as inclusive as possible, that companies are creating these policies not only for attraction into the trades, but also retention. And then on top of that, not only training the women and new people who come in, but what about all the people who are already working? Do they need to be trained? What additional facets did they need to have? As I noted, I was the first woman that almost every single one of my coworkers had ever worked with before. They didn't even know how to talk around me.
Right.
They didn't even know if they should open the door for me. They didn't know if they should stop swearing. And those are really simple circumstances. But making sure that training is included and provided for those already working there. And to me, being public, showcase the programs that you have available for skilled trades and underrepresented groups. If you can show that your programs are public, if you are able to put that out there, you are showing, for lack of a term, the world, I've got your back. We have a policy in place. We are working on this. And by advertising that, people know that by walking in your door, they want to apply because they know that they're going to be safe in that atmosphere. So being public with your programs for skilled trades and underrepresented groups, to me, is a huge key in making a difference.
Yeah. So what areas are you still seeing like such a lack of movement? I know construction has been really slow. I mean, we talk about it constantly in the U.S. that, you know, we're slow to everything. I mean, technology is slow in construction. Diversity and inclusion has been very slow. And we're still, even though the trends are positive, it's still so very slow. And I wondered, like, what area do you think is the biggest glaring need that you see?
This is a simple one, and you are going to hear it from every tradeswoman under the sun. There needs to be proper facilities for washrooms. It's one thing to have a bunch of porta potties, but it's another to have none that are appropriate for a woman. Or I've seen a lot. I'm involved in a couple of different tradeswomen chat groups. And what I hear constantly over and over again is that if there is one for a woman, a lot of the times the code to get in is a certain four digits that isn't necessarily appropriate. it is still a bit of a laugh, but it's something that we're almost there. We're almost there. Right. But it is the number one complaint that I hear from women in construction is just the simple fact of a proper facility for them to use the washroom on site and at the same amount of locations. That if you've got washrooms in four different sites on the construction site, there should also be a woman's washroom or a woman's porta potty at the same four locations, not just one, because there's only one woman on site. So she's got to go to ground floor, fourth floor, sixth floor to use the same washroom. It should be as available as it is to everybody else.
Yeah. It seems so simple, but yeah, it shows you that, man, head slapping moments.
So much room for growth.
Yeah, I know.
Well, and one of the other examples that I bring up as far as restrooms is a factory. If you are having to convert change rooms and bathrooms over to women, and the majority of them were for men, where are they located in the building? How far of a walk is it to get to the women's washroom? How much different scheduling does a woman have to make in her day just to be able to walk back and forth from the bathroom? If it's a 10-minute walk across the facility, that's an extra 10 minutes for every break, every restroom, end and start of day that the woman has to plan in her day just to get to the location, because likely there's only going to be one, possibly, or more, but not maybe as many as there are for men. As just an example, not saying that that's the case everywhere, but it is a really good example that a lot of women have to plan their day with extra time just to walk back and forth from when they're located.
Yes. Mm. And ensuring, I think, too, part of the importance is ensuring that you have women giving insight into those types of things that, you know, whether it's a board or it's the just the leadership in any business or trade, that they have a woman's voice that's telling them what is needed, what would be fair, what is right, you know, so it's not just a bunch of men making that decision for women or thinking like, hey, we've thrown her a bone here, in reality.
Exactly. And I mean, even as far as like board of directors, seeing more women getting even on board of directors is really a great and positive step as well. That someone who has actually lived it, been there, done that, is able to give a personal context to making that change. It's one thing to make a suggestion. It's another thing to have lived in what that suggestion could look like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I had one other question that, you know, maybe I didn't prepare you for, but you know, I was looking back at your accolades, you know, out of these, which one are you most proud of? And, you know, for us in the States, you know, I don't know about what a lot of these mean, but to be awarded top 100 of anything, it's got to make you pretty proud. Which one are you most proud of?
I don't know if there's one that I'm necessarily most proud of. I think the piece that I'm proud of the most about the Universal Women's and the WXN Women's Executive Network is the fact that they included a skilled trades category, where a lot of awards are starting to include these categories that they never existed before. So seeing that step is the part that makes me proud, that skilled trades is being seen as equal and being able to be among the top 100 women, where it never was included before. Now, granted, it has been a category now for a few years, but that's the part that I am most proud of, is that we are being recognized as equals in the work that we are able and are accomplishing.
Good.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that's an interesting perspective. I wouldn't have thought of it that way. I think so many times we get to talking and, you know, it's focused on a woman entering a male-dominated industry, but there's also the flip side of that, of where, as women, what are we acknowledging? What are we placing importance on? And, you know, kind of what we're putting out there. So,
Like there's an award that's not in there, the YWCA Women of Distinction Award. I won that in 2013, and that was the very first year that that category was ever created.
Wow.
And these other two awards, WXN, I think it's now in its third or fourth year of that category, and Universal Women's Network, I'm not sure on how many years, but that's the proud piece, is that that category is coming alive, because there's all the stigmas around skilled trades, but then there's this many more stigmas for underrepresented groups, and then this many more stigmas if you are two underrepresented groups, and then this many more. So there's all these additional layers once you add on being an underrepresented group in skilled trades of stigmas topped on top of stigmas topped on top of more stigmas.
Yes.
Well said.
Well, we're going to go into our zone out portion of our podcast, where we ask you just some fun questions. So the first one is, as a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Ooh, I wanted to be an artist. I loved drawing. I loved painting. And it's recently that my husband actually said to me, he's like, you need to get a new hobby. Because my hobby was skilled trades. And it was my hobby as my volunteer work when I wasn't working specifically with Skilled Ontario. And now my hobby is my job. So I'm trying to get back into stuff. He's got me painting again, and I'm quite proud of it, actually. We got some of them framed, and they're now hanging on the wall.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool. You're still visiting that passion. Yeah. That's nice.
Not trying. I think trying.
All right. Number two, you have your own late-night talk show. Who do you invite as your first guest?
Oh, what do I invite as my first guest? Does it have to be about skilled trades?
No, not at all.
Okay. He's Canadian. He is famous. He is an actor. But seriously, Ryan Reynolds, he is funny as heck. Yeah. I just laugh. If I was going to go on that route, I think I would pick something like that just because he's so funny and everything. He finds a way to just make light of everything. And the fact that he's Canadian and he's so proud of it, he really puts it out there. Oh. I love that fact. And I feel like that's a bit of a cheesy answer. But he's too much of a funny guy.
I love that. And then last, who's the most influential person in your life?
Funny, because I was just thinking about that the other day. A name popped up on my LinkedIn feed and I was like, oh, wow. I'm like, I haven't seen this person in a really long time. And I got thinking about it. I'm like, wow, this person really helped me in writing my resume at a certain point in my life. And if it wasn't for them, I might not have been able to make a certain move. And I don't think there's any one individual. There are so many along my path at different points in my career that helped me get from one place door to another, or that gave me advice. And there's so many, like it would be pages and pages long. But one of the people I always try to give kudos to, aside from my family and my friends, was my lead hand when I was an apprentice. I was drowning in my second year. There was a lot of not so great things happening, and I was really struggling with a certain situation. And he noticed. He asked for me to be switch shift, and he took me under his wing. And he really helped me get through a difficult time. And I almost quit. I will admit it. And if it wasn't for him, then would I have quit? Would I have stuck with it? He made sure I got through it and that I had the tools to handle some of the situations.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that shows a lot of courage that he did that. And yeah, if he didn't do that, maybe you would be painting. I don't know. Well, thanks again for being here. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your valuable schedule and being here with us. And
yeah,
we'll make sure that we send this out to our group and make sure that we promote what's going on up there. And we just appreciate what you're doing for the skilled trades, and keep going. We definitely need it. Slow wins, are, a little bit at a time. That's what we need. So we appreciate you being here.
I just love it as a mother and, father to two girls. We have a son as well. But having role models like you who are paving the way and knowing and having the courage to say yes to things that I think normally, if you had looked at the mountain in front of you, it would have been very overwhelming. But just that you said yes and took those steps and, where you're at now and what you've done for Skills Trade is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
So very thankful for you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you so much for having me and for all your kind words. As I noted, there's a lot that needs to be fixed, and I'm a small cog in a big machine. And so every little bit that I can do will help in the end.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Thanks again, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
All right.
So we just finished having an awesome conversation with Jennifer Green, who is such a strong advocate for getting women in the industry, whether it's construction, she's more specialized in skilled trades, just getting them motivated and started. And I would even step beyond that and say she's a huge advocate for minority, and it's amazing when we're talking to her, because it kind of strikes me as because she's a woman, we tend to categorize her accomplishments within that category. We say, well, she did this as a woman and she did that as a woman. And won't it be great when we're at that point where we can just introduce her as a phenomenal advocate in the skill
without having to put women in front of the award, right?
So as of right now, where we're at, you know, that may be where we're at. And and even that, I think Jennifer was great in pointing out that, you know, those small steps, those small accomplishments and are important in themselves. So.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And I think that the way, you know, she's described as that fearless trailblazer and glass ceiling breaker is so true. I mean, that's a perfect description. When you have to, you know, write policies and you have to completely change a way a business runs, that is exactly what a glass ceiling breaker is. So, I mean, I'm glad that she was willing to say yes and to go through some of the struggles and continue so that now it's an option for other women and, you know, and they can see that, you know, use her as example and say, hey, I can do it too. So we need people like that. And it's just, it's sad that it's taken so long for our industry to get their act together. And, you know, like I've said many times, like who else would be able to get away with what we've got away with as an industry? It's pretty wild. So we need to, you know, pick up the pace, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it's getting there. And I think that's the good thing is, you know, we have people like Jennifer who are paving the road for massive and big change.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us on In the Zone. I am Jeremy. Still is. Thanks again for listening or watching. See you next time.
You've been listening to In the Zone with Jeremy and Valerie Owens. Be sure to subscribe to In the Zone and stay in the know with the best minds in the construction industry. To nominate an innovator or change maker in the construction industry, connect with your management peers, and stay up to date with construction industry news, be sure to visit usconstructionzone.com.